Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks. We're out with Rich Bergeron. We got no guests this week, but we got a lot to cover. We got MMA, boxing, big fights coming up. Big fights went down.
Rich, I saw some of the good stuff you sent me. I haven't had a chance to really read it yet. I would have loved it on a press conference last night, but I was off dinner with one of my friends and his wife. He was his first time.
Yeah, I didn't read much about it yet. I haven't. I actually recorded it, thinking I might be able to get a call in or answer, but, I mean, a question, but I wasn't able to get in. But I'll have to listen to it. Usually, it was a 45-minute call, so usually he goes to his regular people. And it wasn't one of those calls where they tell you right up front what to press. You have to wait till the question session. So some people are so quick at that.
Give me a minute. I got to put this great potato back in.
Yep.
And my steak came out fine. My potato not so much. It's on a carnivore.
It's a good thing because we're getting a vision here from Psyche Tom.
All right.
Yes. Need some steak music for you.
Okay.
We got a big fight to talk about, UFC, Fox 11. What a war, but unfortunately it should have ended in the second round, I think. I wish it did, because Kravitz Brown just got the car kicked out of him. And I know they don't show every second of the corner action, but I was just hoping the 1 minute I saw corner action from Jackson's camp. Somebody would have told him to keep his hands up. Nobody. Not too good, I don't think, for him. I think in the first round was when he broke his nose in the room. It was a pretty decent fight back and forth. But, you know, what happened, I think, was the first round, Travis just gassed out. He had nothing left. And he had thrown his best punches that nobody else had been able to get by in a long time. And he tried to take him out in the first round, and he paid for it. And it just emphasizes defense, I think. And we'll talk about this with Tony later with the Hopkins fight, too. And some of the things that Hopkins said that make a lot of sense in comparison. But I just was watching Travis wrinkle his nose at one point, knowing he broke his nose, and watching it turn purple. And at a certain point, he was just all jabs and right hands and maybe a hook or uppercut here and there, but he just could not touch Verdum. And Verdum just put it on cruise control and just treated him like a heavy bagger.
Yeah, and I think we have to give Verdum a lot of credit for that, too, because he'd seen the pattern of what happened when you try to push Travis Brown up against the cage and take him down. That's a guaranteed nap, pretty much,
right,
in that first round. And we've seen that pattern happen, and Verdum had said he wouldn't do it. He said, I know that the guy's cardio is shaky. I want to take him into deep water. And I think it was a combination of, I mean, let's give Verdum a lot of credit for fighting smart, first off, and for really showing some good stand-up. But also, you have to start questioning, who is the boxing coach there? I mean, Winklejohn has a good reputation, but either something was missing in the communication here or Travis just wasn't able to keep his hands up. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I've seen better defense at the tough man level and the amateur level. This was just horrible. I think that you were probably thinking like I was. You just want to start screaming, whether you want to win or not. You want to start screaming at the screen. Keep your hands up. I mean,
I hate to be insensitive to Travis Brown, but it's bad for both sides sometimes when you have a fight like that, because a fight that really should end maybe in the second or third round goes the distance, and not only is Travis Brown's face all messed up at the end of it, but Verdum's hands are probably broken.
I think Verdum will be fine, you know, but it is just amazing at this, as long as the sport of MMA has been around, it's just astonishing that some of these guys still can't seem to understand how important good boxing basics are. I'm almost speechless at it because, I mean, I know that Travis would have to be more talented than what he showed. Now, for the reason why, I don't know. Maybe someday we'll be privileged to have him as a guest and we can kind of get on the issue with him. But I just, at this point, I just don't get it.
Well, I didn't
talk to him. He went to the gym that looked at boxing like this. Boxing is just punching people. It's not anything.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see, though, a lot of fights, people can keep them on the feet if they want them there. And that's the fights that the fans want to see. That's the fights you get the bonuses. Even though they changed the name of the bonuses, you know, a knockout is still cool in their eyes. So they want to do that on the feet. And Verdum, actually, he didn't really use anything really that dynamic. I think maybe he landed a spinning back fist here or there, but it was most knees, punches, and body kicks, more than leg kicks, I think. And I think that approach and pacing himself, being able to pace himself and being able to get distance whenever he needed it, being able to kind of showboat a little bit with him, it made him look good. But Travis Brown really was on zombie mode from maybe halfway through the second round on.
Yeah, and I think Verdum showed a very good grasp of the basics. I mean, he didn't have to get dramatic. Maybe he could have, but why change success? I mean,
on his cardio too. He wants to really hang with Cain Velasquez, and he's got.
That's a horse of a different color right there. So that's a whole other topic. But I mean, I think for right now, he did exactly what he had to do, and at best, Brown maybe had an even round or barely ecked out the fourth round. I think Verdum kind of took a breather there, but I still wouldn't argue with two of the three judges saying it was a shutout for Verdum. So
my problem with this fight is there's certain points where not the referee should have just warned him, but hey, you need to defend yourself. It's totally legal to do. I mean, maybe you shouldn't have the power to take a point away from a guy as a ref for not keeping his hands up. But it's like in wrestling when you're stalling. You know, this is a one-point penalty. Greco-Roman wrestling, so why not? Something like that. At least, hey, I'm going to stop this fight if you don't start defending yourself. There's just sometimes people are out on their feet and they're able to keep their consciousness, and I think it's like it's a really risky thing when you get in that territory because then you have that shit called second impact syndrome.
Mm-hmm. To be fair to the referee in that case, Brown was he was doing just enough that I don't think a stoppage would have been justified. I think it would have been controversial. I think. Now, I haven't seen the replay of it, but I did see it live, and I know where you're going with this, that it was fairly one-sided for sure. But considering the fact that Brown did have, even though he was out of gas in those later rounds, you still have to think that there was that possibility that he could have landed a punch from left fielder. You know, I hate to call it a lucky punch. I hate that phrase. But there was always, when you've got a guy that can punch, you never know. He's got that eraser. So I would not fault the referee for not stopping it.
Right. Well, then I guess all you can do is yell at his corner for not telling him to keep his hands up.
Get back in the gym. And you know, hopefully when Brown watches the replay of this, he's going to realize he's got to get these fundamentals down. I think Cain could do the same thing to him, and I think we could look at some other heavyweights that you know that the book is out on him now. His cardio is terrible. Just avoid him in the first round and pick him apart. So he's got a lot of work to do, but maybe he can come back and improve. So we'll see. But I think that's what has to happen.
So Verdum did it by unanimous decision.
Well, I was going to say, Thomas, let me make that point. The guy who died by the way, he's a Lock Haven. Still actually one of the best. He's one of the best guys I knew. He was from Lock Haven. He was a well-known athlete. When he was in high school, he was, a rank in amateur wrestling. He was a catcher for the baseball team, on the varsity team, a couple-year letterman. He was a fullback on the football team. he was a baseball player, football player, he wrestled. That was a great athlete. And athletic-wise for Boston, he was not too big, And he was around my weight class. He hit hard. He had decent speed. He didn't have the best technique, but he had a good work ethic. Every fight, he gassed out in the last round. When I say gassed out, even if he won and that final bell rang, he went into the dressing room and laid on a bench literally for 20 minutes. And it was scary, but we kind of figured out that once he had it, he couldn't break. Like, he would get himself so intense that he would throw a punch, he would hold his breath, and he wouldn't get that oxygen back into his lungs. And so whenever I would spar with him, physically we were about even, about the same height, the same weight. He had a good right hand, I had a good left hook. We would go toe-to-toe. Come on, stupid on my part. First round, I'm going to box him. And I'm going to use my knowledge of the sport and my versatility where he can only fight in one style, which is an aggressive type style. I said, first round, I'll let him be aggressive. I'm going to box him. I'm going to use these angles. I'm going to be like Bernard Hopkins. And then I'll wait for the second round to turn the heat on when I know he's already starting to get. And that's going to give him every single time.
Well, maybe, and I know we've talked about this before, that maybe there's a huge element to the cardio factor, because everyone knows how to build it physically. There's no secrets in training, but you have to look at the mental aspect, and you look at George Foreman's Exhibit A. You look at him early in his career. If he didn't get you in the first couple rounds, look out below. But then when he came back, he was more relaxed. He took his time. He picked his shots. He was smarter, and he could go the distance. How often did we see George Foreman go 12 rounds in his prime? Not that he ever had too much, but I rest my case when he finally ran into Ali, and it didn't end in the first couple rounds.
Now that you mentioned George Foreman, I think Manny Pacquiao is exhibiting some signs of George Foreman behavior in his boxing. Because George used to always say after some of his close losses, "Well, I felt bad for the guy, in the last few rounds." So, but take
him. I hit him. George, the one time after his loss to Tommy Morrison, it was another one that notoriously would gas out early in his career. After George lost to Tommy. And Tommy really played it safe the last three or four rounds when he was right ahead. And George was like, I hit him with a couple jabs, and I could see his nose starting to bleed a little bit. I asked the referee to stop the fight. So I don't know if that's George making an excuse to make his decision to be lost. But at the same time, it's like, now he's getting a little too compassionate. This guy's a professionally trained athlete, and you kind of ask him to stop the fight, you get a little blood trickle on his nose.
Well, just going to run through a few more fights here from UFC on Fox 11. I'm not going to go through the rest of it. There's a lot of fights, but this is a big one. Get right to the Bernard Hopkins fight. There's a lot to talk about there, too. On the same front, there's the Travis Brown fight. Defense. What to do? We got some Travis Brown. What to do? We're going to get Bernard Hopkins. The co-main event, Misha Tate versus Liz Carmouche, former guest here, Misha Tate, pretty much dominated, I think, two rounds out of three against Liz Carmouche. The first round was pretty entertaining. The last round was very thrilling. There was a near submission there. Misha almost got her in the rear naked choke a couple times and just did a lot of great grappling, wrestling. A lot of good takedowns for Liz Carmouche. Kind of went to the wayside because she didn't do anything with him. Now they're talking Misha Tate versus Gina Carano all of a sudden, because it doesn't seem like it's going to come right back for the title. But she can if she wants to. So that's interesting that they're throwing that around. But not anything official on Gina's comeback either, so I don't know what to believe on that front. But we had Donald Cerrone beat up Edson Barboza. First round there, got him in a rear naked choke of his own. I think it was right after he punched him right in the jaw. That was a pretty decent fight for him. He got a 50 grand bonus for it, I believe. So not too shocked there. We had,
I think he really looked great. I mean, I don't know what he's done. He was kind of on a bad streak for a while, but I think he's got his mojo back. So looking forward to seeing him again.
Unlike the Red Sox, he cowboyed up. Nice, they're doing shitty this year. What's going on? That used to be their slogan. Back when they were the idiots. Yoel Romero Palacio beat up Brad Tavares. Tavares has kind of had on and off bad vibe going in. This is another loss. Unanimous decision. A lot of people were pissed was not on the big main event card on TV. Khabib Nurmagomedov, the bear wrestler, confirmed bear wrestler now. Unanimous decision win over Rafael Dos Anjos. And if you don't know the story, there's a video circulating on the MMA sites of a little Russian kid. It looks like a couple kids actually wrestling a bear. And one of them was supposedly Khabib Nurmagomedov. And recently said yes, that was him. So we denied it before, but he didn't really remember anything. We also had Thiago Ramos beat Seth Pazinski by unanimous decision, and Masvidal beat Pat Healy by unanimous. We got to talk about Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, I didn't get to see Bernard's fight, but, you know what, I mean, I was talking to my father, who watched the whole thing, and, you know, it brings you back to the point of the, I got to use strong language, of the fucking disgraceful judging in boxing today. I mean, I was talking to people, not just my Philadelphia people, that are obviously a lot of D-Hop supporters, but, you know, these people in the boxing community, and I'm hearing 120 to 107, 12 rounds to nothing with a knockdown in the 11th. 120-107. How the one judge gave this guy 7 rounds is beyond anybody. And that's just another example. You know, now imagine if you had, if you had Stevie Wonder as one of the judges. Well, imagine if Ray Charles was the other judge. Even a guy having his head stolen, they talked about having it stolen a couple years ago. This has got to stop. And, you know, I think I could offer a solution right now, except for reading about it. But I don't know what to say.
What if I told you T.J. Ross was just appointed the Nevada State Athletic Commissioner? What if I told you C.J. Ross was just appointed the Nevada State Athletic Commissioner?
Yeah,
that'd be hilarious. That's a real late advantage.
You know, I'm almost getting numb to this stuff anymore, and this is a bad sign. I'm starting to lose all anger. I'm starting to lose shock. I'm starting to lose outrage. I'm just becoming numb to it. I don't know. I mean, we've kicked this issue around again and again and again, and it still comes back to what Teddy Atlas said at the start of this year, that there are, why can't we see change? Because there are powerful people that like it the way it is. I mean, that is just so that is so beyond disgrace what happened in that. And to be truthful, I didn't see it, but I read a lot of different accounts about it, and it was pretty much unanimous, as you said, Tony. It's nothing to discuss. And this happens, and the scary thing is this guy could be judging a fight this weekend for all we know.
Yeah. When you take some of the bad judges out there, and you know, we go back to Las Vegas, two to three judges that had that fight, the Pacquiao-Bradley fight 2 years ago in Bradley's favor, where he lost, he's now gone, he's gone. And then she has Canelo Alvarez in a draw with Floyd Mayweather. Another fight that should have been 120-108, and if you were generous, 119-109, if you were generous. And then Dwayne Ford. And Dwayne Ford, I actually, he's been a big fan of his anyway, but then he sent a real condescending email a couple years ago that I was copied on. I forget how it was. I think when I was first starting to do stuff with Fighters Unlimited, and I had sent an email. I was right before the Dan LaHoya Mayweather fight. Because I was literally with Fighters Unlimited at that time, maybe about 3 months. And this was the first preview I was going to write, and after that, I was 0-1. But I was sending that. I wanted to do polls on people, too. You know, I was going to say, hey, what do other people in the boxing community think of this fight? And I had sent out an email to some colleagues in the boxing world that I know. Guys like John Kelly, guys like Barry Rosado, guys like Bernard Bruni, who's an amateur and a professional judge. Guys like J.R. Jowett, who's a professional writer. And people have sent a response to me, and I think it was Bernard Bruni, who's a good friend of mine, wanted to help me out. And he forwarded his email and copied me on it to other people in the boxing community, one of them being Dwayne Ford. Kind of sent his email back, like, babbling something or other that he should not have to give his opinion, and, you know, he's a highly respected judge, and it could paint the way people see. Like some bullshit like that. I'm going back 7 years. Don't remember exactly what it was. But I was looking at me. You're the same guy that scored the 12th round of Bernard Hopkins, Jermaine Taylor 1 for Taylor, giving him the decision and the title. He was only beat the shit out of him around the ring and actually was close to scoring and stopping him. And you gave it to Taylor. It was so bad that round that I actually, when people were asking about it, said, how the hell could Dwayne Ford give that round to Jermaine Taylor? My only answer was either he was drunk, he wasn't watching when he already marked it down because he had to go pick a pig, or the most logical answer, they were both wearing, like, Hopkins had red trunks on, Taylor had maroon on, and maybe he confused the two fighters to be fucking senile.
Wow.
You think I got me all fired up tonight?
Wow. Well, getting back to Bernard Hopkins, which started that rant, what a performance he had. I thought Chumanov actually did pretty well with his weird style in the first few rounds, because Hopkins was moving around it, but he really wasn't able to land much. And so it looked like quite a loss a couple of the first rounds, but then he figured it out. He kind of found his range. He was dancing out of range of everything that Chumanov was throwing. And I think it was by the fifth round, Shumanov's defensive posture, if you could call it that, actually pissed off Daniel Jacobs, who was doing the commentary. I think it was Daniel Jacobs, anyway. I was listening to it online, so it could have been somebody else. But he said at one point, I'd like to slap this guy, Shumanov. I'd like to get up in there and slap him. But not keeping his hand up. And you watch the fight, you see Shumanov was fighting tall early, actually. He was throwing a lot of punches down at Hopkins and doing well with that, and then just he got really stiff at a certain point and stopped fighting tall and just threw the throw, basically. There was really no kind of strategy. It was just the same thing over and over again. And just wasn't working anymore. But he ended up, Hopkins really turned it around on him. And totally used head movement. He had his hand down too, which is the odd thing. You know, Daniel Jacob blasted Sandy one, clapping, calling him stupid at one point. He called him stupid for keeping his hand down. Because you can You can do that. You have the license to do that as a boxer, but if you do that, you have to have sometimes the Chimanoff is obviously one of them, because he thought he could go there toe-to-toe with Hopkins and try to force a fight in a phone booth, and the whole time have his hand down by his knee. And I don't know how that worked through the rest of his fights. Maybe he just connected with the right punches early on, but Bernard Hopkins is great. It was funny at the end. Even, you know, this was a special performance. And they asked him to elaborate, and he says, "Special speaks for itself." And he also said, "You know, there's a reason why I'm able to talk to you without stuttering." And he also added that boxing is a science. So you got to listen to a guy like that who's been doing it that long. And everybody in any fighting sport right now, I don't care if it's karate, can learn from performance. So that kind of head movement and the way that he summed it up, why should you have to take a punch? You know, you're good enough to fight it, basically. It was his point. So defense is very key. I think you've seen a lot of fighters go to defense. The best fighters right now being talked about, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, both of them very defensive fighters. And Bernard Hopkins is getting real cocky. He wants to go and face Stevenson up there in Canada. He doesn't care where it is. He wants the best guy with the belt, and you know, he's going for it right into 50, and he looked good. Granted, I'd never had any real faith in Shumanov to beat him up at all, but he looked really good in there, and he made some good points after the fight. I thought, you know, he's definitely still in somehow in his prime. You know, the alien name is starting to make more sense every new fight, even though I think a lot more people grab his executioner. You know, he's really not knocking people out now either, so. Anyway, that was a really good fight, and Travis Brown should watch it multiple times. If you're going to keep your hands down, that's the thing. You know, you can do that all you want to make it unique, but you have to exhibit a lot of head movement. And I sent you guys both that really long article called "There Will Be Blood." And
yeah, that was great.
It's actually a very simple address. I'll read it right on the air. www.boxing.com/there_will_be_blood.html, and that's all you have to type in. And it's got a big picture of Jack Dempsey, and even in black and white you can tell he's got some really thick leathery looking skin, and you don't see a lot of cuts on there.
Yeah,
kind of like a looks like a chainsaw mask from the chainsaw mask.
That's good.
His secret is outlined here in this article about defense, really, more than anything, is the theme, is that a lot of these guys back in the day would keep their feet in brine or rock salt and water. And, I'm kind of maybe too young to understand what brine is, when people used it and what for, but the only brine I know of is for cooking. So I know what brine is, and a lot of fighters probably don't, but this sounds like some great advice because it worked for him. And yeah, he was known for being in some crazy brawls, a lot of rounds. Back then, fighters fought a lot of rounds. And they didn't know about head injuries, so I bet they sparred a lot of rounds in dangerous positions. So to not have as many cuts as he should have at that point, I guess, is proof.
Yeah, now you have to wonder if defense is becoming a lost art, that maybe a lot of these old-time trainers, it's just fading away so much, because it seems like those guys fought so much in those days. I mean, just from reading that article, I mean, my God, you can't imagine fighting every other week sometimes. I mean, hey, get into a title fight and have a couple hundred fights. That's amazing. I mean, you compare it to today.
Inspiration, I think, back then, because
yeah, exactly, exactly, and I have to suspect that the old time trainers really, really focused on that, and I just think that not that we don't have some good ones today, but I think it's becoming a lost art now. I don't know. It's,
right. Yeah, you had interesting styles back then too that you don't see anymore. If you ever watch this tape of Harry Grepp, I mean, talk about interesting. Now, he's one of those guys that had over 350 fights, I think. His record is amazing to look at in boxing, however many fights he had. It's incredible. And just watching some of the old school footage, I mean, it's kind of jumpy because it's so old, but his style and some of these guys, article, Packy McFarland is one of the guys. Talk about a guy from the Chicago Stockyards, and was actually wealthy at the end of his boxing career because he was a businessman. So, there. Freddie Welch, I'd never heard of before, but he said he was a big proponent of the left jab. Said, those who mastered it usually went on to become world champions or leading contenders. And, Tommy Loughran is mentioned in here. Old school boxers. And there's some videos, too. Not all of them work, unfortunately. But there's some videos out there. Anybody who's a big boxing fan should check them out. Check out that. Big fighting fan. It gives you some ideas on what to do about toughening your face up. Without getting a sandpaper treatment every day. but a lot of boxers have that problem. They get cut up pretty easily. Actually, speaking of which, Paulie Malignaggi got cut pretty early in this fight there with Sean Porter. And supposedly it was an elbow, but they looked at the replay and it was a punch. And it looks like he might retire, but I doubt it. I mean, he's going to still keep taking money fights when he comes along.
Paul was a good fighter. He had skill. I give him that. He had skill. He had quickness. He had ability. He put his punches together well. And unfortunately, thanks to him, he had two problems in his skill. One is his very little hand. And the other part was, but if you look back at his career, and I like this money. I know a lot of guys didn't like it. It's just, it's just, he's cocky. Look like somebody, faster than Jersey Shore. But I always liked Paulie. I got pissed off at him with the stupid extensions in his hair at times. But if he had heart. I mean, he fought back from a broken ribs socket to go the distance with Miguel Cotto and Cotto was undefeated. Not a lot of people say they could do that. He came out, and he won a couple of world titles, and his problem was he just never had the punching power from the above enough to get it, guys. He bang to him. So we're having an argument. But Paulie never had that punching power. And he could never really wow the casual fan. Now, should he retire? Yeah. Because can you get certain guys like George Foreman that can punch just devastating? Or even guys like Glenn Johnson or Bernard Hopkins that have good enough chins and are physically strong that they can keep guys off of them and still hitting them with a good hard punch, then you can maybe keep fighting longer. When you get to a guy like Tony Malignaggi, who's not physically strong, you're talking about his quarter manhandle in there, even on the inside, and he doesn't have, he has a decent chin, I wouldn't call it great.
I'm here.
He's got the opportunity to get hurt, and you don't want that. Let him stick to broadcasting and enjoy him on Showtime. He he's got a good career, and I would wish him the best.
Right. Paulie, you heard it here first. I don't think they're going to have Daniel Jacobs back.
Let me give you another example. Remember, and I'm talking about a fighter that was a couple tiers above, an all-time great, a Hall of Famer. Remember Pernell Whitaker?
Yes.
Tom, remember Pernell Whitaker, how great
he was? His mother out of her house, didn't he? Was that him?
Oh, yeah. Just the guy with that kind of style that could frustrate anyone. I mean, he had the whole package. I remember his fight with Greg Haugen was just a masterpiece. I mean, and Greg Haugen was not a cheap date then. But that fight with Haugen, I'll never forget that.
It was a virtuoso performance. I mean, he made so many guys, including great guys like Chavez Lopez. Now, fast forward a couple years, now, there's a lot of debate on his fight with Oscar De La Hoya. I was at a party that night, underage, at a bar, because we all snuck in after the 97 Nationals with the Cassius in Texas, and we watched the De La Hoya Whitaker fight. We were all pulling for De La Hoya, so we weren't really scrutinizing the Sergio Gomez. I never really sat back and watched the fight again, because I didn't think it was really all that good, but there was a debate on that. But now go back even further with Pernell, a little bit later with Pernell, and you're going to see how he really started to, when he started losing his reflexes, then he started getting beaten up a little bit. He at one point said, he was always Hurtado, and he ended up stopping Hurtado, and I forget if that was right before or right after the De La Hoya fight. But, I mean, Hurtado had him beat, and then someone else was going to marry him off. You know, he's like, okay, he was going to that. Him that beat him up, knocked him down a couple times, beat him up. Because when he started eroding his skills a little bit, he did not have the strength, or the physicality, or the power to keep guys off him.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it was really cool that Malik Nagy kind of hinted at it. Hugged it out really good there with Porter and gave him a couple whispers in his ear there. And so I was like, geez, man, he's telling him his life story there. Because Paulie talks fast, so you know he's saying a lot of shit there. I guess he summed it up afterwards saying, he told me to be great, you know, don't make me go out on a mediocre champion or whatever. Go be great. So we'll see. I think he does do a great job at announcing. Reminds me all the time. Every time I listen to his voice, it reminds me of Matt Yanofsky. I did not know
Matt Yanofsky. I think everybody knows Matt Yanofsky.
Anyway, we got another boxing story here from New Haven, Connecticut. You got to watch out for this guy. His nickname is the Mighty Midget. Tremaine Mighty Midget Williams, pro boxer with a record of 8-0, is a professional. And he has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison on an assault weapons charge. Now, what do you think? They say he was 11 arrested during a series of raids in New Haven, Connecticut. And they say Williams was found in a home with a Tech 9 automatic pistol and drugs. And his attorney, Michael Dolan, told the Register he was disappointed with the sentence because Williams had no prior record. And Dolan told the judge, lawyer, that Williams never intended to use the gun and considered it a collector's item. So, folks out there, when you're trying to come up with an excuse for having a gun, collector's item. Tech 9, the collector's item. That's a new one to me. But, nice try. The Mighty Midget. That's going to be a tough name to live down behind bars.
It is.
Oh, no. That's a midget. UFC 172 loses a fight. Card's down to 10 bouts. UFC debut of Joe Ellenberger, who is the brother of UFC welterweight contender Jake Ellenberger. And his opponent is out, so that's a big reduction there. UFC 172 down to 10 fights. That was because of a last-minute training in Baltimore to fight Aaron Rocha. That was a preliminary fight there. Big main event there is the light heavyweight championship. John Jones versus Glover Teixeira. Glover hasn't lost in 5 years. John Jones has one loss, that's a technicality loss. He's won a fight. So the a clash of titans here, big time. And Teixeira might be just physical enough to do just more than Gustafsson did. So. I don't know, Tom. I think you're gonna have to use your crystal ball,
because
I don't really.
Want yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I just get the feeling that Jones is gonna. I don't know if he'll stop him. I think this has good potential to go the distance, but I think Jones's physicality is gonna make a slight difference. So that's what I'm staying with. But as far as the stoppage, I mean, Glover's tough as nails, and hey. He predicts, he was interviewed last night and said he predicts he'll stop Jones in the fourth round by ground and pound. So he's calling around. Okay, he's calling around, but I get the feeling it's going to go the distance.
His cardio didn't look that great the last time I saw him fight Teixeira. And he wasn't really going up world beaters like John Jones has been.
Yeah, I know. I'm not disrespecting Ryan Bader, because he, any given night, you know, he can give a good fight. But Ryan Bader was giving it everything he had, and Glover was in a real dogfight with Ryan Bader. So it's hard for me to go against the champ in this one.
I mean, you look at Teixeira's opponent. He was a guy who hasn't lost in 5 years, but who has he fought in the last 5 years?
Right.
Other than Ryan Bader.
Exactly.
Quentin Jackson, really nothing to write home about. He hasn't even really been doing that. Bellator, he's still kicking that. Rico Rodriguez, I think he's strong. He did not kick out back in the day. He was submitted by Teixeira. A bunch of names I never heard of on this win streak.
You know, and I found it kind of... kind of interesting how Chuck Liddell has really interjected himself into this quite a bit. For like he was saying that if Teixeira gets the fight to the ground, that John Jones won't be able to get up. Well, okay, I it's almost like he guaranteed that wouldn't happen, that Jones couldn't get up. And I mean, I understand that you've got to talk up the guy you've trained with, but I also understand that Chuck Liddell's an executive in the UFC now. And really, that's a little on the favoritism side. And then I think he crossed the line even more by saying, well, if I was in my prime, I would have walked right through Jones's punches. Well, again, it gets down to when we get on this about different eras. I mean, how many times have we been down this road in the boxing world? And I think that the high road would be, well, hey, you know, if I was around in my prime, I'd do good with him, or, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just a fantasy argument in the first place, but let's respect today's champs like we respect yesterday's champs, and let it be at that, I think. So I'm kind of interested there how it was quizzical how Chuck kind of got off on that tangent like that. So, anyways.
Chuck's out of control. He's doing too many commercials, and drinking a lot of that Bud Light, you know, because he gets all the free stuff now.
Isn't it Miller Light? Wasn't it Miller Light, or is it Bud Light? I thought it was Miller Light.
Well, whatever it is. I guess it's
okay,
get
some light. Yeah.
You know the commercial where he gets the front row seats, and he gets to swim with the sharks and the dolphins or whatever.
Yeah.
Beer commercial.
So this is Yeah, this is kind of telling that we don't even know what beer it is. I thought it was Miller Lite. You're saying it's Bud Light. Wow, that's interesting. I don't want to bet on it, though, because you could be right.
Wow. Anyway, the fight actually I'm looking more forward to than John Jones versus Glover Teixeira, because the only reason I'm not looking forward to that fight as much is because I don't think it's going to be as entertaining as this one. Phil Davis and Anthony Jackson. Phil has a lot to fight for because he really didn't
Anthony
win.
Anthony Johnson, remember, Anthony Johnson. He had Anthony Jackson. Rumble Johnson.
Yeah. I've had Johnson on the show. He was back with Ken Pavia as his manager. He had some good and bad experiences with the UFC. The UFC threw him out. He went over to a World Series of Fighting, I think. And they've become sort of a partner to the UFC, unofficial partner. They've swapped guys back and forth for the last couple of years. Phil Davis, he's 12-1-1. Anthony Johnson's 16-4. But Johnson, I mean, he is a reinvented fighter. I think he's really going to take advantage of this second opportunity and bringing him back. His last fight was, World Series of Fighting 8 versus Mike Kyle, knocked him out in the first round with punches.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 out of his last 5 fights were knockout wins. He was in Titan Fighting Championship after a loss to Vitor Belfort. Got him booted out of the UFC there. And went to Extreme Fight Night for one fight, and then he was right to World Series of Fighting, 3 fights there, and all wins since that loss to Belfort. So.
Well, you know, it still gets back to what all guys need to figure at the start of their career. Where do you belong weight-wise? And I just think it took Anthony so long to finally figure it out that he could not in no way, shape, or form make 170, and he couldn't even make 185. So I think he's exactly where he needs to be weight-wise. And this is a clash of styles in a sense because, you know, with Phil's wrestling background and Anthony's punching power, so it's I'd give Phil the slight nod in this, but Anthony's a live body for sure, live underdog.
Yeah, I definitely, I really am going to be in this fight. I've actually heard horror stories from his manager when he was having this big feud with Dana White back in the day, because Ken had shared some books with that were totally legal to share, but apparently he pissed, and Dana White went to a little war with him. And actually he was behind backstage with Anthony Johnson one night, and Dana White told him to leave, and Johnson was just doing horribly from his weight cut and about to pass out at any second. Pavia was the only guy there for him, and Dana White saw Pavia back there and threw him out. So, goes to show you, you know, everything's personal sometimes, but Johnson struggled a lot with weight from what Ken told me. I think he talked about it on our show. I'll have to go back and research that now that I've been going through the files, but yeah, he was always, I think we've interviewed him at least once, maybe twice, but yeah, he was definitely a good interview. And Phil Davis, I don't know about him. He's kind of questionable to me. He's kind of the new Czech Congo, since Czech Congo's gone. Because, you look at him, he looks like he's capable of so much more than what he puts out in the fight. And I don't know whether he has too much muscle for that weight or he just doesn't know how to use his height.
Mm-hmm.
Because, he should be winning a lot of these fights by knockout. He's getting, his last couple wins by unanimous decision. Lyoto Machida, I thought, beat him, and got screwed.
Well, don't you think, though, that there's an even bigger issue about this fight? The fact that he's calling out John Jones. He made the comment that John Jones would be a cookie in his hand that would crumble, and it's how often have we seen guys try to look past the fight they have coming up? Now, I'm not saying for sure that he's doing that, but it sure does sound like it to me. I mean, right now, his whole focus needs to be Saturday night with Anthony Johnson, not fighting John Jones down the road and who the next, you know, who's going to get the next title shot. And I think that could, that would be a very big mistake, because Anthony Johnson's a dangerous opponent. I don't care what anyone says. And that's my question mark going into this one.
Who gets brought back after being thrown out of the UFC? Who gets brought back in the co-main event? For Anthony Johnson to get that honor to begin with is a huge statement. And he's hungry because he wants to stay there. You know, he wants to be in the pipeline. So Phil Davis ought to be scared right now.
and I, as I said, I think Anthony's got the right weight division. He could probably even compete as a heavyweight. It's a mystery how he ever got down to 170 in the first place, back when he was fighting Kevin Burns and Tommy Spear and guys, you know, back at the welterweight level. How could a monster that size get down to 170 and then get in the cage a day later at 200? Go figure.
We also have Tim Boetsch fighting Luke Rockhold. This is an interesting fight. Boetsch is 17-6. Rockhold is 11-2. Rockhold came over from Strikeforce. Boetsch has been around for a while. He's here safe. And Jim Miller back. He's 23-4, fighting Yancy Gutierrez. Miller was on there for years and just kind of lost in a couple fights in a row. That's so interesting to see him back on track. Yeah, Andre Healy, 13-1, fighting Matt Holloway, 8-3. Joseph Benavidez, 19-4, fighting Chip Evans, 4-1. We've got Isaac Valley Flag, 14-4, fighting Takanori Gomi, 34-9. That's a hell of a fight there. Jessamine Duke, 3-0, fighting Korea, who's 7-0. But Jessamine came from Ultimate Fighter there, first one in the show. I think Correa comes from a lot of Invicta fights. We've got Danny Castillo, 16-6, fighting Charlie Brenneman, 19-6. Right there, a lot of fights between those two guys. We've got Chris Beal, 8-0, fighting Patrick. Round it out, so I went 7-3. That does it for UFC 172 this Saturday. Let's see what else we got. Rita Morale, very upset because her contract, considering what his opponent did for the fight, Ryan Baker. It's interesting because this guy, another guy who hasn't lost in a long time, lost the fight since 2005. His record is 32-1. He's a bantamweight champion. A little pissed, a little hurt that Faber made more than him in their last time. So he's been out talking about it. I'm very happy being a UFC champion, but I would like to improve my contract. Actually, an example, I know that Faber is a much older guy in the UFC, but he's not even the champion and has a much better purse than mine. It is rewarding for it to improve. I hope that after this fight, I can have a much better contract. I hope it improves every day. That's not the contract, but I hope they remember that I saved an event. Basically, he's talking about Chris Weidman versus Lyoto Machida. Having to be postponed, he stepped up to take their fight's place at a much of a notice. So he's basically saying, you know, I'm doing you guys a favor, you got to do me one. He says, I prefer to rest a little more, but the UFC needed me, so I'm here to save the event. I didn't know there was another Mighty Mouse. He said, unfortunately, they called me and I accepted. It's always good to fight these big events. I was pretty happy. So, I don't know. Is it fair that Faber makes more? I'd say, well, yes, seniority alone. He's been with the company since the WBC. It's not understandable. security times good behavior. How do you stick with an organization that long these days that throws you out after a couple bad performances sometimes and not get paid? So I think Burrell's a little off base there. Maybe Dana White will have an interpreter and have a little talk. Straighten him right out, like Brock Lesnar. Talking about the wrong sponsor. Here's an interesting little tidbit story Tony will like.
Yeah.
Oscar De La Hoya and Bob Arum are having conversations in their civil.
Oh, shit.
LA Times published a report just today that just last Tuesday, Arum and Oscar De La Hoya talking about ending this little cold war. And mainly the fight they want to see, Manny Pacquiao versus Canelo Alvarez. And De La Hoya actually said, quote, anything's possible. That's one of the reasons I was extending the olive branch. The fans want to see these kind of fights. Unquote. And he also added, I don't speak for Floyd. specifically mentioned this. But, you know, that's not bad if that's all you had to take off the table for these two guys to start working on fights now. Actually, Alvarez already has a fight lined up in July, July 12th, at 154 pounds with Arislandi Lara, who I've seen out there in Vegas at the Cosmopolitan. I think I saw him in a really controversial fight, it ended up being a draw. I thought the other guy won. But, anyway, it's going to be at the Jim Grand out there. So that will probably leave Alvarez open to maybe a December or November fight against Pacquiao. That's what they're talking about, I guess. But it also opens the door to a lot of other fights. Because basically, you know, these two guys have history, Oscar De La Hoya and Bob Arum. And Arum's mad at the MGM Grand. And actually, I saw a really shitty article. I have to say the word shitty because somebody put out an article that, you know, the MGM Grand might be cutting ties with Bob Arum. Their only evidence was they put out a newsletter saying they will not be bullied. They told the staff that they're not going to deal with bullies. So that automatically means Bob Arum? Just because he said you didn't like all the posters hanging up? I don't think so. But, Bob Arum hasn't closed the door to MGM Grand either. But it is an interesting part of the whole developments that are going on. But Golden Boy Chief Executive Richard Schaefer is the one who actually worked on all of Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s fights since 2007. So he would be the one to maybe speak to Mayweather if it's possible to do a Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. But it's in the same family, and as Pacquiao's, or as Floyd Mayweather Sr. said, he wants to see Pacquiao fight some of the more recent opponents of Floyd, you know, before they talk about that fight seriously. And if anybody can convince Floyd Jr. to do it, it's probably Floyd Sr. In fight, I think, but there's a lot more on the list that would open up. And Arum said about this little meeting, I'd be happy to talk to Oscar about any subject in boxing he wishes to talk to me about. Well, this baloney about a Cold War has never really applied to Oscar and myself. We can talk about any subject in boxing rationally. We might disagree on a particular point, but we can talk. I hope we'll get together and have some significant meetings in the near future. And as we know, De La Hoya's been in rehab. He checked in last September and said, I was dealing with personal issues, but I'm back. Golden Boy is my baby. Boxing is my passion. Boxing is my life. This is what we're working on. Grand making the fights we want to see. So, good for boxing, I hope, if it's serious. De La Hoya said, if anyone with Gold Boy has any differences with Bob, it's on them. I have nothing against Bob, and I feel making fights with Bob is beneficial to the fan and markets. Aram said, I've always had a good relationship with Oscar, except when other people interfered. And I got along famously, and I think we will continue to in the future. Remember, we had a long and successful, very profitable relationship. It was a very happy time in both our lives. To revisit that and to renew the relationship is something I look forward to. De La Hoya came right back at him. The love fest continued. He said, Bob, what you did for my career was amazing, and I appreciate it. And I'm so grateful. I don't see any reason why I should extend an olive branch in the Cold War. End the Cold War and make fights together. I'll be making calls in the near future, and we'll make an event together very soon. That's one thing, but that doesn't solve the problem with Hal Heyman. Even though he's not a problem for most fighters who are now under him, his management seems pretty big mover and shaker all of a sudden. With a huge, ever-growing stable. So I'm not necessarily sure he's, you know, entitled or holding the Golden Boy promotions at all. So it's another cog in the wheel you have in the machine, I guess you have to think about. Hey. Speaking of the MGM battle, May 31st, Top Rank is taking their nation again in Macau. We got WBA Featherweight World Championship on the line between Nolito Donaire, 32-2, and Sipui Betieka, 26-2. Betieka coming off an upset victory over Chris John. Kind of awesome. Nicholas Thurst, 23-0, will also be defending the title against Rick Praying Mantis for the Dutchess. He's 39-6-1 Darchinian, and also IBF champion Kenny Gradovich, 18-0, will be making his third title defense, Alexander Biskirtian, 24-2-1. That card's going to be on HBO, starting at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern on HBO. And also, the telecast will include the super middleweight title fight between Carl Froch and Lord be at Wembley Stadium.
Unbelievable.
ESPN is going to showcase two World Heavyweight Championship fights in 2 weeks.
Live.
So, here's the deal. April 26th, this weekend. This weekend only. ESPN will be broadcasting the Vladimir Klitschko and Alex Lipai bouts. Klitschko 61-3, Lipai 30, has 30 wins, 4 losses, and 3 losses. Big heavyweight fight. Then we've got May 10th on ESPN. They'll broadcast Bermain Stiverson, Midri 1-1, and Chris Areola, 33. Two heavyweight. Klitschko's fight will be at 5 p.m. Eastern, and Areola versus Stiverne will be at 8 p.m. Eastern. So check that out. Saturday, this is 26, April 26, Saturday. And speaking of Klitschko, I sent you guys the photo there. Tom said he was referring to Shannon Briggs looking like a cartoon. It's a little like Brutus, a black Brutus from Popeye.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Standing right up in front of Klitschko on the microphone, and Klitschko almost kind of had that look about his face like he was in on it. You know, like he set this up. But it's amusing. Like he's the king, and the gesture is coming in to amuse him.
Yeah.
Shannon's a little aggressive trying to get this fight. I mean, there are boxing shorts, no shirt on. Ready for the fight to happen in 2 minutes. Slow down there, buddy. You'll get the chance. But he's wasting no time. He's had a few fights come together, so we'll have to keep an eye on Shannon. I think the
that fight could happen. I mean, unless the contact gets to the point where Klitschko needs to get a restraining order, I think they'll sign the contract. Take a look at it, everybody. You know.
Jennings fighting Mike Perez, guys, in the WBC. Later on May 24th, American Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas. And actually, Gil and Matthew Macklin will be the headline. Jennings is 18-0 for us. TMZ Sports, there's a weird story. Kasim Umas, they're arrested for battery, according to TMZ Sports in Los Angeles. And he allegedly knocked out a man who was making advances toward him. Umas was arrested for felony battery and confiscation. Yeah, so, he's a guy in the boxer. He doesn't like. Don't try to come on to him. I got the fuck out. I don't know if it was the same guy who was contacting Bobby Gunn Jr. about me and even punching me. That is me. My productions will be returning April 24th to this Bethlehem. Tonight, and it's my old Rico Saunders. This step comes to be in the main event. Heavyweight Roland Bryant is going to be his opponent. Rico Saunders is 22 losses. The 8-round main event. Actually, Bryant is the late replacement. Saunders is the one who's hurt. But Lennon Castillo was the original opponent, who was 11-0, so this actually might be a better fight for Rico. This guy lost a few fights. So that's great that Rico's hooked up with Iron Mike Productions. Hopefully that continues. We got 2004 Puerto Rican Olympian Alex De Jesus, 20-1. Returns to the ring against Gerardo Pepino Cuevas Jr., 17-11. Miguel Cartagena, 12-0, will also be on the card, and kicks off tomorrow. Shea Lizoff, 15-7.
I know Miguel's a good young prospect. I know some friends of his. In fact, one of his Cena friends had met his, the guy who was with Cena when they were dancing in the Melendez with me. And then I saw his fight a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh my God, I'm the best Melendez dancer you ever danced with.
Yeah.
Well, Gene Pascal and Tinterbox have announced they have reached an agreement to ensure Pascal purposes. He's 29-2-1. And he plans on fighting again as a member of 2014. Here's a question to you guys. How much would you pay for Manny Pacquiao's bloody trunks from the Timothy Bradley? Paid a lot for your seats. No, you got them for free, right, Tom? How much would you pay for his trunks?
Well, that's a tough question.
Well, how much do you think they went for in an auction? About that. How much, Tony?
$8,000. Yeah.
Wow.
All right, I'm just going to go ahead and say that's low. Now Tom gets the
answer.
Tom, you got a clue, and you're a psychic, so now's your...
Okay, I would go a little higher than that. Okay. Yeah, I would say let's go in the let's triple that and then add 1,000. Let's go 25.
25,000. Close. A little over halfway there, but actually they sold it at charity auction. 40,000.
Oh,
40,
wow.
And it was a charity auction, to be fair. You know, raise money for the victims. Super typhoon over there in the Philippines. So it all went through. We just had three separate networks at top five bar cards last Friday night. So, actually, it was Good Friday, too. So, but of course, it was a hell of a night for fights. A lot of fights going on. One of them was U.S. Olympian, 2012 Olympian Harold Spence Jr. moved up to 12-0. This past Raymond Charles, who was 12-3-2 in a welterweight fight. Spence knocked Charles in the first round of the night. Followed it up with a combination near the ropes and the same round. And the referee waved off the fight at 2-52 on the very first round. You had Milan Sanchez, 13-3-1, stopped George Silva, 26-2. This is also two draws. Nice main events. Right hand drop Silva. Shaking leg when he got back to his feet. Ref stopped up. As well as combat affiliations as part of Bell Entertainment's popular Broadway boxing series. Amateur boxers down there in New York. We talk about it. Big show. Amateur. Pedro Martinez back in action. On the pitcher for the boxer. Friday, May 9th. Pennsylvania heavyweight title was vacated by Tony Pennekow. Boxing promotions. Smith is a former state title holder on both the light heavyweight and cruiserweight divisions. Smith and Martinez are coming off victories over Tony Perron and Ross in Philadelphia. Well, the Herod in Philadelphia tickets can be purchased. Oh, I got web tickets now. More of that one, Tony?
What?
You going to that one? Herod in Philadelphia? Where is that? Never heard of it. Is that a new place?
You won't come to see it. Say that again?
What is this Herod in Philadelphia?
Oh, that's in Chester, like out of southwest of the city. No, I've never been down there. In fact, a woman I know is a poker dealer down there. But I've never been to the Harrah's Casino in Chester. Chester, I try to avoid. It's a really shitty area. I mean, it's worse than North Philly, to be honest.
Do you know what Chester means?
Well, a girl with bangs or her boobs.
In Latin, that means military camp, actually. I knew that because I come from Dorchester.
Oh.
So that's where those Chesters get their name. Military camp. Back in the day, I guess. Called Chesters. I don't know if that has anything to do with the scumminess of the area. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I stayed at Bally's out in Las Vegas once. They were right next to the offices.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not far from where I stayed when I was out there 2 weeks ago. And I stayed at the Flamingo, which we went at the Flamingo, we were across the Caesars, and I don't know, I'm going up the block, I really don't know, but, we were at Harrah's, I guess that's where I was playing back.
Well, speaking of Las Vegas, the Nevada State Athletic Commission has named a veteran boxing judge with background as a retired FBI supervisor and U.S. Corps captain. They're executive director, so it's not secret. be disappointed. But that's pretty big for boxing. I don't know what it means for mixed martial arts. You know, a guy who's an FBI agent, I would think he'd be snooping around there trying to figure out what he could fix. Maybe that's why the UFC is getting so tough on drug testing. Maybe they saw this guy coming. And I'll tell you, this guy had to be on their radar because the Fertittas own Texas Station Casino. And if you look at this guy's record, Robert Bennett, who on BoxRec, and you look at his record as a referee, actually as a judge, you'll see that he judged a lot of fights at Texas Station. You know, obviously that doesn't really mean anything. But, you know, when you have a relationship with somebody who owns the casinos and they're also owning one of these fight leagues, and you've got also a former commissioner, executive director, actually, I should say, in the UFC, too, I think you're going to have a little bit of politics back and forth there, but... you know, it doesn't mean he's in the tank or anything just because he judged a bunch of fights. He's probably met the Fertittas. He probably knows them already. So that's probably going to help him in this position. But he doesn't seem to have any background with judging MMA fights from what I've heard. And I don't even know how much he knows about MMA. But there was a lot of big names in this pool. If you go to fightopinion.com, you'll read a lot about the California State Athletic Commission's guy, Andy Foster, who is now going back to California with his tail between his legs because he was the favored candidate and then had to pull back. So there's a lot of politics with that. Now this guy comes in with just unbelievable background, Marine Corps, FBI, and boxing judge. That's pretty good stuff. So he's hired. It's a $95,000 a year job, and also Bennett has experience in unarmed combat within Nevada, whatever that means, and has judged nearly 70 professional fights. He also served as security director at the Clark County District Court, where he was responsible for managing a more than $10 million capital budget. He's good with money. Sounds good. He's obviously going to be an honest guy. He's going to have an honor code. He lives by having that military and FBI experience. So I'm looking forward to what he does. So if he does anything drastic or whether he just kind of favors boxing or actually has an open heart for mixed martial arts there. See what else we got. Dominic Cruz back in the news. Even though Dana White said he has literally heard nothing from Dominic Cruz, he says he can have a title shot. He says, I don't think after this much of a layoff it would be right to throw him in there for a title shot unless he wants it. He was the champ before all this stuff happened to him. If he wanted to come back right now and fight Barao, then yeah, I'd do it. Barao is one of those guys, man, I just think Barao is so nasty. I'd fight somebody else if it was me personally. Yeah, we know Dana. It's like, nope.
Yeah.
but that's interesting. Title shot, right away. I don't know about that. Suspensions from Fox 11. UFC on Fox 11. Liz Carmouche is actually going to be sidelined indefinitely. Will require orthopedic clearance on her right wrist before returning to action. So it must have had some real bad damage there. There's some kind of ligaments or something. And undercard fighter Jack May will receive a similar suspension and will require neurological clearance. Six additional fighters received extended medical suspensions, including heavyweight headliner Travis Brown. Surprise, surprise. Brown will be out a minimum of 90 days after suffering a broken nose and cut above his right eye. I actually thought it was more than that. I thought he had a broken rib and a broken hand, according to his own camp, but I don't know if they factored that in there. Let's see, Liz Carmouche, as mentioned, Marcide
will have a 180-day suspension for facial CT clearance. Brad Tavares will have a 45-day suspension for supra-orb part hairline. Whatever that means. He got his hairline parted.
Oh.
Orbital bone, maybe. That's some technical jargon there. Luke Zakrick suspended 30 days. Esteban Payan gets the same thing. And Thiago Alves gets a 21-day benching for a right hematoma. As I mentioned, John Jones called out Chuck Liddell. That's been an interesting story. He also had a little tussle on the conference call with Phil Davis. Tom mentioned a little bit of this. Davis says, whatever Glover does to him, I'll clean up whatever's left. And Jones was kind of not prepared for that. Probably because Glover hasn't really been very aggressive in the back-and-forth hype with him. And he didn't expect it from Phil. He just said, not nice, Phil. Davis said, you're welcome. Jones replied, I didn't say thanks. Later, Davis said, we all saw that you were scared about his fight with Gustafsson. And he said, what did you do to overcome your scaredness? Did you get a nightlight, a teddy bear? What did you do? Jones answered that, yes, he slept with a teddy bear. Then there was some awkward silence. Jones expressed some real amusement, feigned amusement, patience, impatience, and exasperation with Davis with his awkward office. And he ultimately got in the last word, though, and said he's not interested in facing Davis. He says, I have nothing to prove by fighting a guy like Phil. If anything, he's embarrassing himself today. I'm not going to sit here and fool myself by entertaining Phil. It was funny at first, but now it has become a little silly. There's a big target on Ronda Rousey's back, as everybody knows, and it's just got $5,000 bigger because American MMA announced Saturday $5,000 will go to the woman who knocks out Rousey. She called fellow women's MMA star Chris Cyborg an it. This is kind of sort of a story, though I don't think it's a real big story. Because it shows a little bit of a double standard. If you remember, the words were a little bit harsher, but Matt Mitrione said some really bad things about Fallon Fox, the
transgender
female slash male. And he got fined, I think, and suspended?
Yes, both.
Because of their conduct policy. Now, granted, this was kind of a off-the-cuff remark, but it was an interview, and Ronda Rousey's basically saying because of all the stuff that she's taken, she's more of an it now. Talking about Cyborg. Now, I call foul, but this has been done before. So, plenty of people have called her worse there, Cyborg. I mean, look at her nickname. Her nickname is Cyborg, so technically she's a machine, right? She is an it. I don't agree with that terminology.
Yeah, and then I also seen today that apparently Dana had said that Cyborg reminds him of Wanderlei Silva in a dress.
Oh!
So, it's just going from the sublime to the ridiculous. And we haven't even got on this whole Rousey Floyd Mayweather thing. I don't know if that's even worthy of commenting on, but I have a strong rant on.
I see the alerts for it every day because, of course, Floyd Mayweather is a big news draw, and, of course, Ronda Rousey is on top of the MMA articles, I mean the alerts I get. And
you know, I keep seeing this headline, Ronda Rousey could beat Floyd Mayweather in a fight. And it's always MMA. So what's the point? Obviously, Floyd has mentioned that in his own interview, an MMA fight. He doesn't care. You know, it's never going to happen. So why are people talking about it? Shit.
Well, and furthermore, what is it just makes some of these MMA fans seem so retarded. First off, do you have a clue the difference between a Floyd Mayweather punch barrage and what she's been running into with the girl she's been fighting? Does anyone have a clue about that? I don't think so, or they wouldn't be saying what they're saying. I mean, Mike, if Floyd would hit her so many times so fast. And, you know, people would say, well, you know, Floyd's not a one-punch knockout artist. But I remember before that Diego Corrales fight, I really had that one wrong. I guess someone must have took a blanket over my crystal ball because I felt that Diego Corrales had the physicality and he could to make the fight happen any way he wanted. And Floyd proved me so wrong in that fight. Knocked him down, what, four times, I think? And four or five times. Okay, the point is Floyd may not hit, I mean, he may not have one-punch knockout power, but as fast as he hits, and let him hit you five or six times. And for Ron, for someone to say with a straight face that Ronda Rousey would just get right through that, pick him up and throw him down, the fight's over? I don't know, man. Maybe you guys see it different. Where am I wrong? I mean, I just get the feeling that Ronda would be having her teeth for dinner.
I can't say that you're wrong. I mean, I think that, let me guess, that's all the things that you said. And this was Dana, me and Dana. Am I right?
Yeah.
Joe Rogan started the whole thing. And then last night on UFC Insider, it came up again. And Kenny Florian's just parroting the company line. I mean, I know he's being paid, but still, at some point, now at least Chael Sonnen kind of dodged the question. He didn't say yes, he didn't say no, but he handled it maybe the way that you would do if you're getting paid. But for Kenny Florian to come out and say something like that, I mean, if you're that wrong on some issue like that, what do you write about? And for now, I didn't hear Joe Rogan's initial talk about it, but I mean, I think then even Dana, he was doing a 10-point something on ESPN, and then he even said, made some comment to it. And I'm thinking, do you know how bad and how idiotic that makes the whole fanboy crowd in the MMA world look to me?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, Tom. I feel that I'm right in the middle of it half the time just because of my strong stance on boxing. I got friends of mine, I got a friend of mine, and I'm going to segue this into what we're talking about. I got a friend of mine, he's a big guy, you know, he's bigger than me. He's about my height, but he's physically bigger than I am, and I'm a pretty big guy. And he's in there, and he's trying to say, well, I can do this and I can do that. Because you're a boxer, you can't do anything off your feet. Once I get you down, and I dream and pound, well, of course, well, you must have been trained here to dream and pound. Big lumbering ape. That's just, you know, I would hit you times if you were close to me. I have not even attempted to see the flow they ever had. Now, Ryan is a trained fighter. He needs to do that. She's strong. She's physical. But we are talking about somebody that itself is a master of guidance, moving around, forcing you out of position, and then tattooing you from every conceivable angle of this hand can be from. The guy is what you call a virtuoso.
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying anything bad on Ronda. You know, they're trying to pump it up. It's just trying to have a superiority complex. You know, oh, hey, so-and-so did this, whatever. He hit 10 home runs this year. 5 hit 12. Oh, this guy ran a 4.63. I ran a 4.540. I'm better than you in everything you get. And Dana was, you know, whatever, the way he acts, and he gets all these people because he all wants to put his ass. He reminds me of Jim Carrey. I don't know where they end and who starts or something like that. But they're all together. You're trying to put themselves up by making, you know, putting somebody else down. I remember a couple of years ago when Mayweather was fighting Marquez, and I was on a conference call with Rich, and we were thinking of it, actually, because all other guys didn't say something, I was going to get off. And Dana was babbling. Why are you going to watch Mayweather Marquez that night? Why are you going to watch Mayweather Marquez that night? And, I'm going to have a fight with seven great fights on it. He's only going to get the Mayweather fight. He's going to be dancing with the stars. He ain't going to fight. So it's like, hey, ask some people, they have four fights in the card they're selling. And the Mayweather Marquez fight was better than the UFC card that night, which was hard. But he's always trying to put down instead of promoting the quality of himself. So our girl could be your best guy.
Well, that's where the conduct policy makes no sense, because Dana White doesn't have to follow it. A statement from Rousey.
And then there was a comment on the Underground from Kirk, the guy running the Underground. He was saying, well, you look at the James Toney Randy Couture thing. And someone called him out on that real quick. I mean, for one thing, James Toney is light years past his prime. Light years past his prime. And second, Randy Couture is a man, okay, with some boxing experience. At least he knew how to keep his hands up. So I don't know. It's just one of the most ridiculous arguments. And it just seems to be taking on a life of its own now. I mean, I don't know if it's even on Floyd's radar screen.
I can't, say, and I have to make myself look better than you. And that bothers me a little bit,
Yeah, of course.
I can't make myself look better. I have to make you look bad. And we were arguing the one time, and he was saying, he goes, well, I train this and I train that. I'm like, oh, have you been sparring? No, not yet. I'm like, oh, okay. But you're talking to just talking the walk. And we're going back and forth. And what did he say to me? He goes, I want to spar you. I want to spar you. I said, okay. And he goes, but we have to use my rules. I said, okay, so you want me to step out of my element to take you on in grappling? I get to use my hands, but I have to take you on in grappling. And he said, yes. I said, okay, win or lose. No matter who wins, who loses, or if it's a draw, then you got to put the gloves on and take me on in my sport. Well, no, I can't do that. I don't train like that. I said, but I don't train like that. Well, but imagine if we were on the street. And I said, son, I'm going to tell you something right now. If we were on the street, don't think I wouldn't get you before we went to the ground. Because remember something. A trained boxer that knows how to box traditionally has faster hands than a mixed martial artist that knows how to box. Does anybody know why?
Because you're working on punches way more than anything else.
I would also say that the hand is quicker than the feet, for the most part. Now there are exceptions to that rule. But the hand is quicker than the feet. I mean, that's boxing's thing. That's what boxing is.
That's exactly the point I wanted to bring up. And that's the point I'm going to bring up with this nonsense of this Mayweather Ronda Rousey thing. You look at it like this. If you are in a mixed martial arts fight, okay, and you are coming towards or away from your opponent, do you not often have your feet, at least one of your feet, off the ground to either administer a kick or defend against a kick?
Right. Exactly.
When you do that, does that not take a little bit of time away from lateral movement? It does. And it's also, now to punch, you have to set your feet. Now, against somebody that's in the same boat, okay, what's fair is fair. I have my lead foot up a little bit, and I'm moving like that, and I'm laying on my feet, and I'm trying to kick or defend against the kick, and at the same time, so do you. But now you go in there with a guy like Floyd Mayweather, and you're going on there like this, and you're defending against the kick, it's never going to come. and you slowed yourself down, you slowed your movement and your punches down for half a second. Now, you take a trained boxer that's skilled, and I'm talking about great guys, Oscar De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Canelo Alvarez. These are all great guys. These are all potential, some of them already, all the same guys. And Floyd was that much faster than them with his rules. And the same rules. So imagine if you take your rules, which are a little bit slower, how much faster you're going to be. It doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. And you're right. You can pepper Ronda or whoever with about a good 6 or 7 shots. Only reason James Toney was a mismatch with Randy Couture is James is older, James is very lazy, James is out of shape. James likes to fight a counter-punching style, so he would lean against the rope and the rope-a-dope. Well, you can't rope-a-dope against an MMA fighter. It's like a grappler. You can't let them grapple you. You have to stay on the outside and pepper them.
These days, too, yeah. you're hearing a lot more about female boxers getting involved in MMA and being mentioned in the top tier. And Holly Holm, and the June Luton's going to be making her debut. I got that story, actually. But she said, the whole quote was, I've said before, I don't care if she's injecting more semen into her eyeballs. I'll fight her, but that's just my personal decision. But I can't make a decision for the whole division. I can't say it's the right thing. This girl has been on steroids for so long and has been injecting herself for so long that she's not even a woman anymore. She's an idiot. It's not good for the women's division. It's not good at all. So that's the whole thing in context. Because as far as the Mayweather debate, I don't think there is a debate. I think if there's any debate, I think the women coming in from boxing to MMA are the biggest story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see more of that through the next few months when Holly Holmes develops more. Gets that broken arm healed, and Anna Juleton maybe comes on the scene. But speaking of the hurricane, we have got to talk about the hurricane there. Reuben Carter. I never did really like that name, according to that article that Tom sent.
It was funny. As I started to type that to you guys, I remember reading that article because it came out on my 13th birthday. I'm dating myself here, okay, October 14th, 1963. And there was a big picture of Carter in that. Now, and I got to thinking, well, maybe if I Google this, I can find it. And sure enough, went into the Sports Illustrated vault, and there it was. And if you guys read that, you can kind of see now what his legal problems were in 1966 when he was arrested for this. Because just showing that article in court, all that stuff was factoring into it. And I believe his appeal was he was wrongly convicted. It wasn't really that he was innocent, but he was wrongly convicted. But there was a lot of dirt in that article about him before, a lot of stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed it if you got to read it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, speaking of Rayco Saunders early on, he had a lot of gang and prison history before he got into boxing, too. It's a familiar story with a lot of young black males. They get sucked into that system, the hustle, and boxing gets them out of it in a lot of situations. That documentary on CNN, Chicagoland, has a whole episode where they use boxing to get the kids off the streets. And, that's just how people find it sometimes. And they actually first get introduced to fighting, like Carter did, on the street. Get into a fight with somebody, and somebody notices they got talent. Next thing you know, they find their way somehow into a gym. And for Carter, I didn't even realize how he actually got a lot of his experience in the military. I didn't know the story that he had been, he ran away from a reformatory, I guess, to get into the Army. So when he got back, they threw him back in prison. And this is all before he was wrongly convicted of these murders.
Yeah.
That Dylan made him famous for.
And I thought it was interesting with his when he was drunk and him and his friend, who had said he'd done a little fighting, went in and wanted to try out for the boxing team in their state of intoxication. And the then they woke up the next morning and said, Carter says, well, maybe that sounds like a bad idea, but the lieutenant wanted to teach him a lesson. So they put Carter in with the heavyweight and knocked the heavyweight down in the first round. That really taught Carter a lesson. Well, there's an example of natural talent. Yeah, that was interesting. And he was a scary man back then, but I remember the Dick Tiger fight. I was looking forward to it because Dick Tiger was just a full-blown middleweight. And Carter was a little, even though he was big and muscular, he wasn't really, I mean, he was kind of, I think at that point, we didn't seem to have the super middleweight division. It was just different then. It seemed like you went from welterweight to a middleweight. We didn't have a lot of halfway points in between. And I think Ruben would have been a lot better had there been a super middleweight division then, but he was just a little outgunned with Dick Tiger. And it was an interesting fight with Tiger when he fought him because he traded for about the first three rounds and kept getting knocked down, and then he finally decided that he was being a little foolish running into Tiger's punches and tried to box, but he was really no boxer, so he stuck around for the decision. But see, it would have been interesting to see where he could have went had that not happened in 66, but interesting story.
Yeah, he never got to be a world champion. He went 27-12-1 with 19 knockouts, and probably his biggest fight was when he stopped Neil Griffin in round one, 1963. And he also fought for a middleweight title in December of 1964, losing a unanimous decision to Joey Giardello. Three people got shot on the day that he was arrested there for murder there in June 1966. The Lafayette Bar and Grill in Paterson, New Jersey. And Carter and his friend John Artis, who was actually with him when he died, both convicted by a hall wide jury. Based on the testimony of two thieves who later recanted their story. Granted a new trial and briefly freed in 1976, but they sent him back for 9 more years after being convicted in a second trial. Finally, I think it went to the Supreme Court or a big enough court where the judge noticed that this was based on race and let it go. And actually, we had a guy, Patrick McElligan, who knew Ruben really well. A big time boxing historian and actually helped him with some of his legal stuff back in the day. Tried to get him on this week, but I guess he's not using email anymore, not around. So I don't know what's going on. But Patrick was great talking about him. He really admired the guy. And so he sent us a picture once of him kind of shadow boxing with him. But Carter actually wasn't a very public person as far as traveling the United States doing a lot of stuff until I think recently. Anyway, he actually kind of had an Ultimate Warrior moment too because he wrote an opinion essay for the New York Daily News in February arguing for the release of David McCallum, who was convicted of a kidnapping and murder in 1985. Carter briefly mentioned his health, saying he was, quote, quite literally on my deathbed. I also wrote, now I'm looking death straight in the eye. He's got me on the ropes, but I won't back down. So, obviously, there's still a lot of controversy. I read another story about the neighborhood. There's no monument to him in Paterson, even though he had such a great boxing career. Family still lives there, but, people still talk badly about him. He's never really lived that down, even though he was exonerated eventually. He did a lot of work trying to defend people in certain similar circumstances. So, I guess it will always be somewhat of a mystery, but I gotta his innocence. Knowing the people that knew him and researching the story myself. Sounds like he was definitely set up. The police had a growing 8 years back. He did do some bad things to some people and came back in a bad way and he
sir. Sir, back out of it.
Here's a great excuse to get Shane McTorino going. The Flying Hawaiian is a huge big martial arts fan, apparently. Especially the Table Blues, I think, is an interesting issue. Recently on an interview with Fox Sports, and he talked about loving MMA and his favorite fighter of all time, Chuck Liddell. And he says all the guys in the Red Sox clubhouse are really MMA fans. And I trained in MMA a little bit, and it's tough, but it's nothing compared to what these guys do. I think they're some of the best athletes, best conditioned athletes in the world. I would never, ever step into the cage myself. I respect these guys so much. He also said that knowing UFC CEO Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White, what impresses me so much about the UFC is how much passion they have for it. They're really fans of the sport. They love it so much. Just knowing them and talking to them, it's made me like the sport even more. Because it's like contagious. It's made me a bigger fan. The passion they have is incredible, and they really want to make it the best sport in the world. And it says here, Victorino has attended several UFC fights and tries to watch as many events as the schedule. One of his buddies, Tiger fans, he said he's impressed by the work of John Bones Jones, George St. Pierre, and Anderson Silva, among others, but the MMA icons will arrive before long. Sports popularity is rising. And when I was a little kid, UFC wasn't really around. We didn't have that when we were growing up. For me, I see the sport in the next 5 or 10 years going to the next step. I think the sport has just touched the surface. So maybe we got to contact the Red Sox front office. Let's see if we can get Shane Victorino on a little interview. That'd be a first. Questions, right, Tony?
What?
Shane Victorino on the show?
Dude, if you got Shane Victorino on the show, you feel to just sit down and not even talk. I'll
take
over.
Yeah, I figured.
Man, and Shane was one of my favorites. It was nice to see him win a second World Series last year. He was a guy that really wanted to be in Philadelphia. Put me up as an email. I'll send you some photos that I took. Put me when I was in Chicago. And he was right there signing autographs. I didn't get an autograph, but I got a picture of him from 5 feet away. You know, just a general, friendly, nice guy. And a good ball player.
If he ever does change his mind about going in the cage, he already has a great nickname, Flying Hawaiian. Be an interesting conversation. It would be tough not to talk baseball before. I don't even know if we'd be able to get him for that. We might be able to get him for that.
But
he's not doing that much because he's on the bench, so we can get him at all. That's a tough one. Out of my comfort zone, I guess. Not in the comfort circles, but if I contact the right people in the Red Sox, I'll send them my photo of Harvey W. Rand's grave. Never saw the Red Sox win the World Series. Have that hanging up somewhere. Picture of his grave. I worked at the cemetery back in England after the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004. I went back and I seen this guy. It's just a plate in the ground. The epitaph is, never saw the Red Sox win the World Series. He was born in 1952, died in 94. So after they won the World Series, they put a World Series pennant next to his plate, a Red Sox hat, and a headline from the newspaper on a little sign. Pretty cool.
They won that World Series. I had a guy that I used to work with, and he was a die-hard Red Sox fan. I mean, loved the Red Sox, hated the Patriots, and he was a Redskins fan, played the fucking balls all the time. And one day, the guy, I don't think I'm going to be Redskins anymore. I think I'll be an Eagles fan. I'm thinking out loud. We don't want you. You can't jump around. You're such a diehard Red Sox fan that you're so wishy-washy in your football team? No, not acceptable. But I thought the Sterling was real bad about it. But I remember when they won in 04, and it was only a few weeks before he left for another job, I just remember him coming in that day, and then this one, his face, was pretty genuinely happy. For a few years, I waited for that. I mean, I was only waiting for the Phillies before they any sort of team to win something. But after seeing his face, I said, God damn, I want that feeling that he finds right now. Because I've never experienced it. And then they won. I'm like, no, I finally know what he felt. So you two are going to love this. When the Red Sox won the World Series in 04, they came back from the Yankees and they were down 3-0 in the series, and they came back and won 4 in a row. My friend Nicholas, what was the first thing he bought after they won? A Yankee jersey. And he showed up to him. It was right around Halloween. It was the day or so before Halloween. We used to have a bigger Halloween thing there. I think that was Ricky Williams from the NFL. He just left his $8 million a year contract to give him a big drug test. And I'm just thinking Ricky Williams, the other guy who shuts up the chair, two star shirt for that. And then all you see is this guy Nicholas putting the Yankee jersey and a paper bag from stumbling in like he's drunk. And this thing was, I'm a Yankee fan drinking my sorrows away. Why? Oh, why? We weren't supposed to lose. Oh, why? And then he took the new chair of the office and threw it down. But, yeah, get Victorino on here, man. That would be awesome. I'll give you guys a night off.
Shaking, I can make that happen, I think. Anyway, I've got some boxing matches to talk about. That are coming up, but we got a few more stories I got to run through pretty quickly here. I mentioned Anna Juleton coming up in a fight. She's actually last month. She's going to be fighting in the Philippines. She's going to make her MMA debut as a fighter 2 inches taller and 10 years younger. She steps into the cage, 1FC against Miss Saber, S-A-B-E-R. We'll see how that one goes. But they're one of the biggest organizations in Asia. Actually, it's maybe the biggest. Bout's going to air on Fox Sports, Star Sports, and several local free-to-air channels. Rich, speaking of 1FC, Rich Franklin might not end up having his last UFC fight because he's in the mix for an executive position at 1FC. They've offered him a position as vice president, and he's actually negotiating with him right now on that settlement. Lorenzo Petita and Dana White both gave their blessings.
Maybe no more fights for Rich Franklin. Quite the promotion. That'll just be something to keep an eye on. Haseem Rahman is in the news. He's actually in a big tournament now down in New Zealand. And he's pretty much the top guy in that tournament so far. 61 pro fights, 50 wins, 41 by knockout, and 8 defeats with 2 draws. One of those was against David Tua. And one no contest after an accidental headbutt. James Toney back in 2008. His highlight was beating Lennox Lewis in South Africa back in April of 2001. And he was a
15 years ago.
Yeah. The university. So, actually, I do have a line out to those folks down there in New Zealand. They've sent me some stuff about this, so hopefully we could get Rockman on the show. That'd be interesting. And if anybody knows anything about boxing, one thing Rockman is known for is the picture of that giant egg on his forehead. Hematoma. Probably the worst hematoma
anyone that had ever been known for. Mark Harmonick maybe had something close once. But, yeah, that was pretty bad. Former guest Joey DeMaco and Mark Rideout will be meeting over 8 rounds in an all-Philadelphia match on Friday, May 16th at the arena, 2300 Arena in South Philadelphia. DeMaco actually recently served as a sparring partner for Vladimir, so I guess we hit him at the wrong time. It's interesting. Looking to get him back on the show. Let's talk about that. But this is an 8-round bout. Actually, at the top of the card will be another 8-round bout between Neen Nelson of Philadelphia and Jerome Rodriguez of Trenton, New Jersey.
My name is Jim Nelson, good young fighter. I'm managed by my friend Dave Price. He was just quite low at school. I was going to make it to him. Might have been a card Thompson came with me. He gave that card to the card I went to in August, but he broke his hand in training. So he's got a big puncher, but he's got pretty good skills, and he's trying to make his mark. I think he's got to sit down and punch a little bit more.
And that car is being promoted by Pelt Boxing and your buddy, Bam Boxing.
Yep.
Girl there.
And so Jimmy is the one who sent me the invite.
And so maybe we'll get your perspective on that when it comes along. But there's another story about Al Haymon getting another fighter. He signed a deal with Amir Khan recently. He's fighting on the Mayweather undercard, so not much of a surprise there. John's going to open up a lot of doors with that one, I think. Mikey Garcia is declaring that his promotional agreement with Top Rank is illegal and also expired. He's suing the company in California State Court. The lawsuit started on April 8th, and suit says that the reason for the action is because of, quote, Top Rank's unlawful attempt to exploit, own, and permanently control, unquote, Garcia's boxing career. So, this is an interesting one. I'll keep an eye on this. Obviously it's the beginning stages, but Garcia's not very happy. He says, this is a problem. So, Floyd Mayweather Sr. and Ruben Guerrero, also Yoel Judah, are all on this Nuevo TV boxing reality series, Knockout. I have not heard or seen anything about this, but this article. They basically have three trainers. They choose their respective teams, which consist of one fighter in each of the 140, 147, and 154-pound weight divisions. And among the boxers, the best known is former world champion and famous pay-per-view foil Ricardo Mayorga. That's what I wonder when he's coming back to boxing. 29-8, 23 knockouts. The others are Dennis Mama's Boy Duglin, 15-3, 8 KOs. I think we have he's one of Matt's boys, Pat Janowski. Also Mark Sulzer, who's 15-1, 9 KOs. Saeed Kwali, who's 29-4, 23 KOs. Steve Upshur Chambers, 24-3-1 with 6 KOs. Jose Angel Rodriguez, 17-3-1 with 2 KOs. Right, 11-1, 2 with 5 KOs.
Steve, Steve Chambers, that is Tennessee Chambers' only brother.
Yeah. And we got Juanito Garcia and Tim Coleman also. The show is going to be an elimination-style tournament. The winners hopefully facing a top 20 contenders. And obviously there's a storyline with a feud between Mayweather Sr. and Guerrero. There's Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Nuevo TV, which I never heard of, so I have to try to find that somewhere. We talked 2 weeks ago about Dana White paying a fighter $5 million, and who was that? Well, Joe Rogan let it slip that it was George Stephen here. So, that's a story that's put to the wayside now. Another story here, briefly, there's a lot of MMA fighters talking about toning down their sparring because of brain injuries and brain health concerns. Quick hit here, Jake Shields signed with the World Series of Fighting. And I did want to mention a couple of boxing matches that we didn't get to. We've got,
big one over in Moscow, I think. Denis Lebedev from Moscow fighting Guillermo Jones. Lebedev is 25-2 with 19 knockouts. Jones is 39-3-2 with 31 knockouts. That's for the WBO World Cruiserweight title.
Lebedev is just saying, I think the rematch, Lebedev had the knockout of Roy Jones, but I think Guillermo Jones has cut him. So that's a rematch.
And yeah, let's see what else we got. I know we got another boxing match I didn't mention. We talked about the Pennsylvania, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania card, Iron Mike Productions. Got another one from New York. ESPN2, Friday Night Fights. Actually on tonight, right now. Josecito Lopez and Aaron Martinez. Josecito Lopez is 31-6 with 18 knockouts, and Aaron Martinez 19-2-1. Thomas Williams Jr., 16-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Enrique Ornelas, who's 34-8 with 22 knockouts. And Noriega is out of jail. He's fighting in this one. Mike Noriega. 4-2 with 4 knockouts, fighting tough name. Manuel Isabel Weirdly. Not much else really worth writing home about on that card, but thought I'd mention those two. I know I've got one more here somewhere for next week. Let's see what we got. Give me 1 second. We got a flyweight fight between Andrea Search, 34-6-5-13 knockouts, and Valerie Yanchi, who's 22-3-2 with 7 knockouts. That's for the big EBU European flyweight title in Lombardia, Italy. Got a Sonora, Mexico fight here, flyweight championship on the line. Juan Francisco Estrada is 25-2 with 18 knockouts, fighting Richie Leprechaun, who's 27-1 with 6 knockouts. That's for the WBA Super World flyweight title and WBO flyweight title. On that card, Hernan Marquez at flyweight, spending a 10-rounder against John Mark Apolinario. Marquez is 36-4 with 26 knockouts. Apolinario is 17-3 with 4 knockouts. Last one. Here's an interesting one. Talk about a journeyman. Slovakia. Slovakia. Fight card, a 6-round cruiserweight fight between Tomas Kovacs, who's 23-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Zoltan Birez, TRS. His record is 44 wins, 49 losses, 25 losses by knockout, 3 draws, 17 knockouts. That's 100 fights. Next week we'll have plenty to talk about. So you'll see 172, of course, and whatever else comes along. Oh, here's one we forgot. Carson, California. Good card on Showtime. Welterweights, Keith Thurman and Julio Diaz. Thurman is 22-0 with 20 knockouts. Julio Diaz is 49, 40 wins, 9 losses. 1 draw, 29 knockout wins for the WBA World Welterweight title, the interim title. Also, lightweight Omar Figueroa is undefeated, 22-0-1, 17 knockouts, fighting Jerry Belmontes, who's 19-3 with 5 knockouts. That's for the WBC lightweight title. How did we forget this card? Lots of good fights. Lucas Matisse is in action. He's 34-3 with 32 knockouts, fighting John Molina here, 27-3 with 22 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBC Continental America's lightweight title. We have Vince Orozco, 19-0 with 15 knockouts, fighting Martin Honorio, record of 32-8,
16 knockouts, one draw. Jermall Charlo is back in action. He's 17-0 with 13 knockouts. Fighting James Winchester, 16-9, 6 knockouts. Also got undefeated Frankie Gomez on the card. He's 16-0 with 12 knockouts. Still somehow fighting TBA. And Terrell Gaucho is 8-0 fighting Charles Whitaker, who's got a 40-win, 14-loss record with 24 knockouts and 2 draws. So we got another fight weekend here. Fights on Friday, fights tonight. We have it on, the fights tonight here. Eric Martinez is just starting now. So that's all for us this week. Next week we will definitely have some kind of guests. I don't know if it'll be Shane Victorino, but I can feel it. I'll see if we can make that happen.
That'd be kind of hard.
Yeah.
Shane, you know, thanks for running at the bottom of the night. You know, we can win this game. Guys, I'm on the phone with Fight News Unlimited. Can you send somebody else something?
Yeah, I got to get him on the day off. Sure. Oh, here's next Thursday, May 1st, right?
Yep.
Kind of caught this. Franz Botha is having another fight with TBA in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. I thought this fight was already lined up for somebody else, but now they're saying TBA. He's 48-11-3 with 29 knockouts and 11 losses. Emirate Golf Club over there, May 1st. And then we've got another Thursday night fight next week, Roberto Garcia and Victor Manuel Payo on ESPN2. Yeah. They're cutting into our programming. We're going to have to sue them.
Good luck with that. James McGirt's also on that card next week, and your buddy Rogers Matagua is fighting.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess that's it for us.
Well, gentlemen, I hope you have a great week. I got to check that myself.
Yeah, I don't know if we're still recording, but Tom's not on, so usually that cuts us off.
All right. Never mind. I'll see you later.
See you later. Adios, folks. If that's still going. I'm on the air, so.